Well, on feast days, we always try to offer a sacrifice of praise on the morning and the evening, so throughout the feast, so kind of where we're at on that. Why don't we stand and sing together? Start with Psalm 100.
All people that on earth do dwell, sing shouts of joy unto Yahweh. Him served with mirth his praise foretell. Come ye before him and rejoice.
From my fears Thy Spirit goodly do. The land of uprightness, Yahweh, for thy name's sake, be pleased to quicken me, and for thy truth forsake my soul from misery. Yahweh, for thy name's sake, be pleased to quicken me, and for thy truth forsake my soul from misery.
Well, we got through it. I think we did all right.
Everybody has a King James Bible available, and if not, we got a stack of them around here. Did they get brought down? We're going to recite the Ten Commandments together, because that's some of what we're going to talk about today. Did everybody know that the Ten Commandments would be given 2 days from now, on the third new moon? So at the ending of the Feast of Weeks, as we understand it, the Ten Commandments were delivered on Mount Sinai. And in our regular reading, we go through the law, and we're in Genesis 20 actually today, and just not because it's this time, it just happened to happen that way. If you go back just one chapter to Exodus 19, you'll see verse 1, it says, "In the third month, when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they into the wilderness of Sinai." And then after that, it tells us a 3-day passage of time had occurred up until that point. And so, it's a pretty memorable feast, actually. The giving of the Ten Commandments took place during this new moon. And so that's an important thing to remember, and the words of the covenant are pretty important as well. So if everybody has their King James Bible now, we try to just use one translation so we don't all fumble around and sound ridiculous and speak in unknown tongues to one another. We'll just start in verse 2. That's why we use the King James. We'll say it together. "I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other God before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me, and keep my commandments. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. For the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work. Thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's." And we may be seated. Well, we can go a couple different ways. I don't know if I'm right, actually. We can go a couple different ways today. And
I think it's best to kind of meet everybody where they are, but that's the point. The memorable part of today is that, or of this feast in general, is that the giving of the Ten Commandments and the preparation for that all took place. And we just read the law itself. And I discussed already with you what how that came about in 19. And so what I was thinking is it might be best, and you tell me if you want to do that or if you want to discuss the Ten Commandments. We can kind of talk about how that will work. But how about feast discussion? Should we go over feast discussion, timing, what the feast represents and things like that? Now, some of this evening's message is more of a preaching to get you roused up to help move some of the spirit that needs to move there. But as far as knowledge goes for Bible study, that's what I guess I'm asking. Would we like to discuss the feast proper or the Ten Commandments proper? We can go two different ways. So what would be the vote of the men? I suppose I'll put it to the men, and I'll even include the older kids as well.
The feast proper.
The feast proper.
I'd like the feast proper, too.
Okay, well, let's do that, then. So we're going to discuss the feast, then, in general. So what I'll do is I'm going to give an outline of our timing as well, but that doesn't mean that we're going to dwell on that, at least unless we have to. So as far as timing goes,
I'll move over here a little bit so that the speaker can hear me a little better. As far as timing goes, the reason we keep the feast now is because if you go to the book of Leviticus, chapter 23, which is the basic outline of Israel's festivity, Leviticus chapter 23, and you go down to verses 9 and 10. 23:9 says, Yahweh spake to Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, When ye come into the land which I will give unto you, and shall reap the harvest thereof, when you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest, he shall wave the sheaf before Yahweh to be accepted for you. And it says, On the morrow after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. And ye shall offer that day when ye wave the sheaf and he lamb without blemish, and it goes into the sacrifice. And so one of the things that's not specified is which Sabbath the count is to come from. Okay, and there's been a lot of different opinions over the years over it. And I'll tell you the reason why I side where I side on it. One opinion has been long held is that if you believe that Saturday and Sunday had anything to do with Jesus' calendar, that the Sabbath closest to the feast of Passover was used, and then what they would do is they would say the Sunday after that begins the count, and then they would count out 49 plus an extra day. That was the usual, that's kind of the way the Catholics interpret it still to this day. Another way of doing it is the way even the modern day Jews still do it, where they just count 50 days from the Sabbath of Unleavened Bread, the first Sabbath on Unleavened Bread, and they just run that out. Whatever day that falls on, that is kept as the Sabbath of the Feast of Weeks. And that's another way. There are some, very few, but there are some people who keep it on the last Sabbath at the end of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and then they run it out that way. Well, here's the problem with those three and why I don't side with them. And then there is one more, and I'll give you that in a minute, that's fairly new. I've never heard of it until about 10 years ago. But the idea behind the numbering there is anytime randomly you have the feast being counted off of a lunar event, which is Passover is always a lunar event in almost everyone's calendar with very rare exceptions. You're going to then land a Sabbath somewhere in just the middle of the week or haphazardly on top of another Sabbath. So 50 days counting out does not necessarily come out near anything connected to nature or anything connected to anything. So that's how the Jews will have their day just fall anywhere. The Catholics always have it fall on a Sunday because they choose that rotation of Saturday, Sunday as their interpretation. Okay? I don't side on that, and as well, the same thing would happen with counting from the end of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Our count starts on the eighth day and the ninth day. And the reason for that is it's the first Sabbath of Abib, which is the agricultural month. So, and actually, right behind Andrew, there's a calendar. If you want to pass it around, you can kind of get a visual of what we're talking about. There's three of them. You just pass them out if you'd like to. I printed those out.
So the day after the first Sabbath
of Abib. And so that's, right, that's the only option that you have where you can choose something that answers to an agricultural reasoning. The agriculture is advanced enough to do what needs to be done in a week from then, which is to wave a wave sheaf, which we still have our wave sheaf sitting here, actually. This was cut. This was cut. Well, now 51 days ago. Okay, this was the, where our barley was at that time in the agricultural cycle. And so we cut it, and at that time it was green. It's not green anymore. And it was at green ears, and it has a very, very small amount of grain inside there. And we still have it sitting there kind of as a memorial. But that brings us to, you know, where we are, where yesterday, where now it, that crop is totally finished. And wheat harvest has begun, which this feast is called the first fruits of the wheat harvest. So the last fruits of the barley harvest end, the first fruits of the wheat harvest begin in exact timing if the timing's done correctly. If you choose it too early or too late, it throws the agricultural cycle off with it. And so very neatly, the barley harvest comes to an end right as the wheat harvest comes in. And that's just the way nature works. So if you plant your grains last year in the fall, which is what everyone did, is they planted in the fall, they wintered over. And then the sunlight and the conditions cause it to come up at the right time. There's a natural staged process between the wheat and the barley where they come up in order. And that's what the Apostle Paul refers to in the Bible, if you've ever paid attention. He says, Christ the first fruits, and we at his coming. Okay, there's a progression. Everything in its order is what he says. He's referring to the way the feasts were understood in his time and the way we should still understand them. And so that's why we choose the eighth day, because it takes us right to the new moon that dovetails in with the remembrance of the Ten Commandments. And if you look at the calendar, you'll see the things Christ talks about throughout the days of the feast. These numbers here on the right-hand side of this calendar are the counts, the Pentecost numbering. And then if you look at the different events that take place, you'll see where Christ is speaking to the disciples, where the temple is destroyed historically, and a lot of things kind of start happening as you get to the time of the Pentecost, including the ending of Noah's flood that was taking place a couple days ago, which all answer to, you know, events that take place in a historical understanding. So the Feast of Weeks, as we understand it, starts last evening, and it goes all the way to the new moon. Okay, and that, and it ends with the giving of the law. It ends with the giving of the law on Mount Sinai. And so one of the reasons Leviticus 23, we interpret that way, is because no Sabbath is specifically mentioned as to which Sabbath does this count begin on. And there's multiple events that happen in what we just read. There's the reaping of the harvest. There is the bringing of the sheaf to the priest, which is recognized as two different things. When you understand the way the system of worship happened, like a lot of people have in their mind that every single person would take their offering to the temple and onto the altar. That didn't happen. Okay, only the priest went and approached that, the ordained priest at that time. And so the common men, through their elders in their tribal system, had Levites attached to them. They're the officers. It says, judges and officers you shall have in your gates in the law. Well, the officer was a Levite, a lawyer, so to speak. And that's why Jesus talks to the lawyers and stuff. Those are the judicial recorders, is what the Septuagint calls them. You know, it uses the word grammatos, meaning he's able to write and to read and record things. And so those men were used to record the offerings and to take the actual offering to the priest. And so how it would be read from my perspective on it and how I would give it to you is that was the time in which the people brought the sheaf to the priest. They actually would take their sheaves. Individual people would go to their grain fields and they would cut available crop as the first fruit offering. And then they would walk to Jerusalem. Back then they didn't have cars and airplanes.
So everybody walked to the feast. So that took a little bit of time. So for a whole week, you were walking after that, with the priest was taking that offering. And not every person went up to Jerusalem either. Not everybody could leave their farms and do the thing. So you'd have local celebrations in regular houses happening, where the law says, and the clean and the unclean shall eat it alike. Then there was the holy festivals happening in Jerusalem, where the people, the Levites and the elders, would come to the altar and offer the Passover. And then the day after the Passover is the Sabbath. 1 week exactly is the wave sheaf. That's the day Jesus rose from the dead. So Christ rises from the dead. At the same time, the priest would have taken a handful of the offerings that came from all over the coasts of Israel. All 12 tribes would have given their offering. And they would take these big bunch and apparently wave it on the altar and then cast a handful of the grain that they spent a lot of time that day processing, because there's not a whole lot of meat inside of those. It's almost really hardly anything. And they would get a handful enough, Josephus, the historian, records this, and they would cast it into the fire for the altar, and that was the wave sheaf. And it represented a collection from the whole people going up to the Lord. That's what Christ was to represent in his resurrection, apparently, because that's the third day resurrection from the dead. And so that's a 1 week happening, because you need time to get the harvest to the priest, and then you need time to get that harvest to the altar. You can't just snap your fingers and bring a harvest from 12 tribes into one location. So you need a time period. So choosing the eighth day to start the count is why I think that makes the most sense. Logically, agriculturally, it all works together. And so there is one other count where folks do this, and I think the reason for that choice has been made because they recognize a disparaging happening between the harvest and the festival, and that is there are some people who do 50 days plus 100, okay, or I'm sorry, 50 days plus 7 weeks, or 7 weeks plus 50 days, however you want to look at it, which brings you out to closer to 100 days of Pentecost. So theirs is on the fourth month, which interestingly enough happens the same new moon as we're observing, only we call it the third. So the reason for that, I believe, is because they recognize there's a problem with the harvests that occur, and so somebody figured a system that would make sense. I've heard people discuss it, and from the Hebrew reading of it, it's not only is there no historical references to it, but you can't really derive that interpretation out of either the Septuagint or the Masoretic text, which the King James is based on. That's just where I'm at. I'm not on the 50 days plus 7 weeks idea. So it would be 7 lunar weeks, and then plus 50 regular counted days brings you up to the fourth new moon. That's how some people do it too. So I'll just throw that in there so you know. Those are the major perspectives that are out there. The last two are only lunar Sabbatarian perspectives at this time. There are a few people who have held the same position that I'm talking to you about historically, but it's not something that you're going to find a lot of people talking about, because almost everybody believes Saturday and Sunday is the Sabbath being referred to. And the Catholic Church leads the parade in saying, yep, that's the way it's done, and that's how we're doing it. Why are you going to challenge me? Because I'm bigger than you are. And that's pretty much that. And so, as far as timing goes, that's the reason why the timing works out that way.
Well, I have a question.
Yep, go ahead.
So, it says in verse 11 in Leviticus 23, to be accepted on the second half of it, be accepted for you on the morrow after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. So, is that talking about, right, the morrow after the Sabbath, is that talking about the ninth of Abib?
No, the
way talking about Pentecost.
So. The waving is the wave sheaf day.
That's Pentecost.
Yeah, the reaping of the harvest is referred to the time it's brought to the priest, your local priest, and then from there, there's a division between that and the waving that happens in the next chapter. Okay. And so that's the way in which.
So you're saying the reaping of the harvest is in verse 10, and shall reap the harvest thereof, and shall bring the sheaves of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest.
Mm-hmm.
So is that where you're saying it happens on the ninth day?
Yes.
Okay, and your argument for that is because of that's what Josephus says?
Or no, because the timing needs, you need time to get from the reaping to the offering, which is exactly 1 week.
Oh, okay. And okay, so it's based upon how the timing of the Abib is growing.
It's based on, yeah, it's a month of Abib in the first Sabbath of the month, and the month, and the Sabbath is unspecified as to where the count begins. So.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. And so you can kind of there has to be a natural organic answer if God doesn't provide one specifically in His Word. That's essentially the algebra of the question, basically.
I understand. I guess my question would be, what would make the difference between starting to harvest it on the second compared to the ninth?
The second day?
Yeah, like the day of the new moon.
It would come in, your 50 days would have come in last week.
Which would not line up on a new moon?
Which would not, yeah, it would come into last week's Sabbath. It would be the day right before last week's Sabbath.
If you
did that. And so on top of that, a lot of the other, like the counting of Christ's resurrection, you know, when Christ ascended and left the people, and then he says, you know, tarry here in Jerusalem till power is endued from on high to you, that whole scenario would be happening after Pentecost, as far as the count goes. Because we have certain numbers that are told to us, which we can get into here in a minute, might help save all this for the end as we discuss it, maybe.
Okay.
We can go over all that if you want to. And so, all right. So, this is the best place to go next, I guess. So that's the timing aspect of it. I think we've covered the agricultural end of it, right? So the whole focus of the feast is actually concerning the wheat harvest. If you go to Exodus chapter 24,
this is out of my Bible. That's the one I was looking for.
I'm sorry, 23. Not 30. Let me stop for a minute. Exodus chapter 23 and 34. I'm saying too much at once. We'll kind of get a...
Are you saying chapter 23 and 34?
Yeah, we'll go to 34 after that. So, maybe Josh, would you mind reading 10? 10 to 16.
Okay, so that's...
Or 17.
Chapter 23, 10
yeah.
to 17.
Yeah.
Now you shall sow your land for 6 years and gather in its produce, but on the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, so that the needy of your people may eat. And whatever they leave, the beast of the field may eat. Thus you shall do with your vineyard and your olive grove. 6 days you are to do your work, but on the seventh day you shall rest, so that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your maidservant, as well as your sojourner, may refresh themselves. Now concerning everything which I have said to you, beware and do not mention the name of other gods, nor let them be heard from your mouth. 3 times a year you shall celebrate a feast to me. You shall keep the feast of unleavened bread. For 7 days you are not... 7 days you are to eat unleavened bread, as I commanded you, at the appointed time in the month of Abib. For in it you came out of Egypt, and none shall appear before me empty-handed. Also you shall keep the feast of the harvest of the first fruits of your labors from what you sow in the field. Also the feast of the ingathering at the end of the year, when you gather in the fruit of your labors from the field. 3 times a year all your males shall appear before the Lord Yahweh.
Okay, so that specifically calls this the Feast of the Harvest. So I'll show you a couple other places where it refers to it as the Feast of the First Fruits of the Wheat Harvest. So there's different ways to refer to this festival. And so one thing has to be understood, that whatever we do, whatever we're doing in time, has to come out and it has to come out in the harvest period, and it has to happen at a time where the people can celebrate what's coming out of the fields. In other words, if the timing comes out too early, it's wrong. It's just intrinsically wrong. Intrinsically meaning the inner workings of it naturally just cannot work. You can't. You would hold a contradiction. You'd say, well, I need to do this, but I can't do this, so I'm going to do this anyway, even though I can't do this. And that's not right. And that doesn't give us the right answer. And so this is one of those key verses that tells us whatever we do, however this count works out of Leviticus 23, it has to be led by the fact that it's a feast of harvest, of first fruits of your labors, which you've sown in the field. That's what it has to be. And tabernacles, likewise, is the Feast of Ingathering, is the other name for it. So it has to be a Feast of Ingathering that happens at the end of the agricultural year after you've gathered in your stuff out of the field. So you have this natural, organic structure that underpins everything. In other words, God's not asking to be worshipped just because you counted the amount of days out. That's not what God's asking. What God asked for is us to give thanks for our harvest. Give thanks for our food, to give thanks to Him for the things He gives us. And the first fruits were really important, much more important to our ancient ancestors than we are, because we have refrigerators and we have stores and we trade across oceans now and do a bunch of stuff like that. Imagine that you didn't have that kind of thing available. The grain supply is running out because you've eaten all winter long on it. And the barley harvest finally comes in, and the wheat harvest finally comes in. It's going to be one of those things where you're just so thankful that there's food to eat again. And you don't have to worry about, you know, starving, essentially, or just eating meat because, well, that's all you got is to kill some cows or sheep or chickens or whatever. You know, all that stuff plays into the mindset that God kind of imbues into the festivals. And it's something that we shouldn't really, I mean, if we're farming anything, even a garden, it's something that we should recognize. It's a real joyful time when God has proven yet again that He's faithful. You know, He's proven yet again that He's going to take care and provide. There's just a lot more meaning to the festival when you can truly worship the Lord with the first fruits of your labors. And so Leviticus 34 also makes a mention of this, as well as Deuteronomy 16, which we'll go there in that order, since we're already in Exodus 34. I'm going to tie something in just a little bit into this and kind of passing and a mention. Christian, if you wouldn't mind reading it, start in 14 and reading this just so we can kind of tie in some things.
I'm sorry, are we in Exodus 34?
Exodus 34. Yep.
14.
And then go ahead and read that until 26.
Okay. Exodus chapter 34, verses 14 through. For thou shalt worship no other god, for the Lord, whose name is Jealous, is a jealous God. Lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they go a whoring after their gods, and do sacrifice unto their gods, and one call thee, and thou eat of his sacrifice. And thou shalt take of their daughters, and thou take of their daughters unto thy sons, and their daughters go a whoring after their gods, and make thy sons go a whoring after their gods. Thou shalt make thee no molten gods. The feast of unleavened bread shalt thou keep. 7 days thou shalt eat unleavened bread, as I commanded thee in the time of the month of Abib. For in the month of Abib thou camest out from Egypt. All that openeth the matrix is mine, and every firstling among thy cattle, whether ox or sheep, that is male. But the firstling of an ass thou shalt redeem with a lamb. And if thou redeem him not, then thou shalt break his neck. All the firstborn of thy sons thou shalt redeem, and none shall appear before me empty. 6 days thou shalt work, but on the seventh day thou shalt rest. In earing time and in harvest shalt thou rest. And thou shalt observe the feast of weeks, of the first fruits of wheat harvest, and the feast of ingathering at the year's end. Thrice in the year shall all your men children appear before the Lord God, the God of Israel. For I will cast out the nations before thee, and enlarge thy borders, neither shall any man desire thy land when thou shalt go up to appear before the Lord thy God thrice in the year. Thou shalt not offer the blood of my sacrifice with leaven, neither shalt thou sacrifice of the feast of the Passover be left unto the morning. The first of the first fruits of thy land thou shalt bring into the house of the Lord thy God, and thou shalt not see the kid in his mother's milk.
Okay, so one of the reasons I wanted to include the before mention is this kind of is a really important thing to think about. God is absolutely explaining that he's jealous for worship, that he is a jealous God and he desires worship and worship alone. And that's it. There's nothing to be said there. And he also warns us that worshiping like the heathen do will inevitably lead us to be like the heathen. Marrying with the heathen will inevitably cause you to be like the heathen. And so God makes this first distinction, and then you notice he actually starts talking again at the end of that statement where he talks about casting out the nations from before you so that those things don't happen. But what he's pointing out here is that here is what I want you to do because I'm a jealous God. You, no molten images, no marriages with heathen peoples. And remember, I'm a jealous God. Here's how I want to be worshipped. And so God gives three festivals, and then he ties little precepts to those festivals. A precept's kind of a smaller statement in the law. And the first thing he says is unleavened bread. He gives the example how to do it, when to do it, in the month of Abib. He also ties the concept to that of the firstlings coming out of the womb, that come out of the matrix, because in the springtime, that's when sheep are born, that's when cattle are born usually, in most usual conditions. And he makes a point that these are mine. And so he starts to talk about the firstlings immediately. Another thing he does in this chapter that he also already did in 23 was he said that the Sabbaths are important to him. So important that he says even in earing time and in harvest time, earing is when you put the ear of grain into the ground, last fall, and this is whenever you take the crop off and harvest. So he says, the Sabbath is so important to me that you can't even ignore it during that time. I need my worship. I'm a jealous God, right? And so God does not express his worship in flowery things and glittery things and gold and silver and brass and all the stuff that we usually think of when we think of glory. We think of something that a king would want. Instead, what he says is, I want you to celebrate and sacrifice to me from the grain of the land that I give you, from the animals that I give you, from the things that I give you, is how your worship towards me is to come. That's one of the reasons why in principle, in the regulative principle of worship, which is what we call it, what regulates our worship by the scripture, we believe to give back to God the words he gave us. In other words, you sing the Psalms, you sing the scriptures, you quote the scriptures, you cite the scriptures in worship, because God gave them to you and you give them back to him. That's how he enjoys worship. He doesn't want man to derive their own words and give them to him. He doesn't want man to invent like the heathen do and give them to him. And nor does God want us to join that type of worship to us and hybridize it, mix it, and then give it back to God, because he doesn't want it mixed either. God wants pure worship because he's jealous for his worship. And that's the principle that comes. I want the Sabbath. I want the feasts. I want the things I give you given to me, because I told you to do them. I don't want you to think about what I want. I want you to do what I want. That's God's principle. Well, to the feast proper of what we're talking about, immediately after that earing time and harvest time statement where he says, remember the Sabbath. Why that's important to the way we interpret things is because in the lunar Sabbath system, we only have one day every year that breaks the lunar cycle as a Sabbath, and that's the Day of Atonement, which is the only fasting day that we have. That's the only one. And even it can be counted in sevens if you start with the selection of the lamb in Abib. So there's a seven-month happening that takes place, but that's kind of for another story. There's only one day that's called a Sabbath of Sabbaths that's absolutely commanded, and that's Atonement. Other than that, in the lunar Sabbath cycle, everything follows Ezekiel 46:1, that you have 6 working days and the Sabbath. 6 working days and the Sabbath. And so one of the reasons God put this in here is to say, listen, all these celebrations I'm telling you are important, but the Sabbath is really important. The harvest is important, but my worship is important. So he takes two things and corresponds them. He puts two things together, the harvest and his worship, and he puts them into one package, right? And then he gives that one package to the people and says, if you use this formula, kind of like you're figuring out, you know, a math problem, an algebra problem, you'll arrive at right answers. Always keep my Sabbath, celebrate the harvest, make it all work together. And if you do that, you'll come up with a system that pleases me. And so that's why I think God puts that there. And he does that in opposition to the heathen who invent their worship with molten gods. And so in 22, he says, observe the Feast of Weeks. And that's where we get the term Feast of Weeks. And Christian can pronounce it for you the way the Hebrew roots people do, but I can't. Because I pronounce these B's and he pronounces these V's. So how do they say it?
Shavuot.
Shavuot? Yeah.
Shavuot.
Yeah, see, I took all my Hebrew lessons out of Strong's from the 1900s, and they still pronounce B's like B's. So, so anyway, that's where we get the concept of the Feast of Weeks, and tying that to the first fruits of the wheat harvest. And if you notice that little statement there, Feast of Weeks, Feast of Wheat Harvest, and you take it back to what was said already in Exodus chapter 23, he just called it the Feast of the First Fruits that are taken out of the field. So one is an expression of all your first fruits, garden crops and whatever you're harvesting that's newly coming to be celebrated with, and the other one is specifically putting its focus on the wheat harvest. And so you have, you know, a full agricultural understanding when you have a bib being mentioned. A bib's an agricultural term, green ears of barley, first fruits of wheat harvest, Feast of Ingathering, which is at the year's end, meaning when everything comes out of the fields. And so then you celebrate at the year's end like that. And then he tops it off by saying, 3 times in the year, your men shall appear before Yahweh, the Lord, the God of Israel, and because of your worship towards me, I'm going to respond in casting out your enemies. So what's really important about that statement there is, and there's natural reasons behind this as well, but men are specifically required to keep the feast. If you notice the statement, it says, your men children. And that doesn't just mean kids. It means the children of Israel. He's a men folk of Israel. And the reason is that's because we lead the families. And if men decide they're not going to keep the feast, the family follows real quickly. And so I've been around a lot of people who, if they're not with a church, they don't keep the feast. So if they're not with other people, it's just not important to just have my family keep the feast, you know, alone if we have to. And those families are always the people who the children leave home and don't keep the feast at all because, well, it wasn't important to dad when we weren't around someone else. And so that's, I think, for us an encouragement to definitely keep our mindset that regardless of where we are, who we're with, feast keeping is something that's an example to the children. It's an example to the people, and it's impinging upon dads, fathers, to keep that. And so if you went to Numbers chapter 28, you know, we can read about this. The next two, let's go to Deuteronomy 16 first, actually, before we go there, because it corresponds more to what we're reading, rather than doing it in order. Andrew, do you feel comfortable reading?
Yeah, I can read.
Okay. How about you read 16:1? And just read, yeah, 1 down to 13.
Okay.
I suppose, well, that's too far. The 12.
Okay. Keep the month of Abib and celebrate Passover to Yahweh your God. For in the month of Abib, Yahweh your God brought you out of Egypt by night. and you shall sacrifice the Passover to Yahweh, your God, from the flock and the herd in the place where Yahweh chooses for his name to dwell. You shall not eat leavened bread with it 7 days. You shall eat with it unleavened bread and the bread of affliction, for you came out of the land of Egypt in haste. And that you may remember the day when you came out of the land of Egypt, all the day of your life, for 7 days no leaven shall be seen with you in all your territory, and none of the flesh which you sacrifice on the evening of the first day shall remain overnight until morning. You are not allowed to sacrifice the Passover in any of your gates of the town which Yahweh your God has given you. But at the place where Yahweh your God chooses for his name to dwell, there you shall sacrifice the Passover in the evening at the sunset at the appointed time that you came out of Egypt. And you shall cook it and eat it in the place which Yahweh your God chooses. In the morning you are returned to the tent. 6 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a solemn assembly to Yahweh your God. You shall do no work on it. Then you shall celebrate the feast for a week to Yahweh your God with a tribute to the freewill offering of your hand, which you shall give just as Yahweh your God blessed you. And you shall be glad before Yahweh your God, you and your son and your daughter and your male and your female slaves, and the Levite who is within your gates, and the sojourner, and the orphan, and the widow, who are in your midst in the place where Yahweh your God chooses for his name to dwell. And you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and you shall be careful and observe these statutes.
All right. Let me read to you out of the King James how it states verses 8 and 10, 8 through 10. 6 days thou shalt eat unleavened bread, on the seventh day shall be a solemn assembly unto the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not do it. No, I shouldn't have read that one, I'm sorry, 9. 7 weeks is where I meant to go, 9. 7 weeks shalt thou number unto thee. Begin to number the 7 weeks from such a time as thou beginnest to put the sickle to the corn. And so this is going to answer what Christian asked earlier. You see where it says begin to number from the time that you put the sickle to the corn? Corresponding that back to Leviticus chapter 23, as far as cutting the sheep and offering, giving it to the priest, for it to then go forward, the count starts at that point when the sickle can be put to the corn. So that should play into that answer a little bit. 10, and thou shalt keep a feast, the feast of weeks, unto the Lord thy God, with a tribute of a freewill offering of thine hand, which thou shalt give unto the Lord thy God according as the Lord thy God has blessed thee. Now, that translation read quite a bit different. It's actually hard for me to follow along with what it stated there. But the numbering process is more itemized as far as how it goes in verse 9. Now, it's good to remember that this is tabernacle law. This specific chapter in 16 is actually referring to the sacrifices and the stuff that happened in the temple. So this is not the common man's guide to how to keep the feast. This is more referring to the priesthood in a way that they needed to observe it in the way when they were in the place that the Lord chose, which was Jerusalem, Shiloh, when things would come to the feast there. And God says, you can't keep it in any towns. And that's important because some people use this verse to say, see, there's no Jerusalem, there's no feast anymore. You have to have Jerusalem to have a feast. But really, what it's limiting, the first Exodus was kept in houses in a foreign land. So then after that, it was kept in the wilderness with no towns at all. So that can't be the case. What it is telling us is that you're not supposed to be establishing towns for worship that are not the one place of worship. So there's only one true place of worship. There aren't towns or gates, is what they call it in the King James, that are sanctified for temple worship. So no other temple but one temple. That was kind of the point that was being made there. And so this specifies that. However, the counting is still the same as what the common people obviously are using. It's just the priests are the ones who are integrated into offering that sacrifice. So this is all mentioned. And so it's also mentioned in Numbers chapter 28. We'll go there now. Probably didn't know there was this much in the Bible on this piece, did you? I don't even know if we'll get to all the chapters. Verses 26 and 30. So this is specifically 26 through 31. Maybe Levi wouldn't mind reading 26.
28, 26, 31.
Yeah, 28, 26, 31.
Also in the day of false fruits, when ye bring a new meat offering unto the Lord, after your weeks be out, ye shall have a holy convocation. Ye shall do no servile work. But ye shall offer the burnt offering for a sweet savour unto the Lord, two young bullocks, one lamb, seven lambs of the false fruits. And their meat offering of flour mingled with oil, 3/10 deal, unto one bullock, 2/10 deal unto one lamb, a 7/10 deal unto one lamb throughout the 7 lambs, and 1 kid of the goats to make an atonement for you. Ye shall offer them beside the continual burnt offering, and this meat offering they shall be unto you without blemish, and they'll drink offering.
Yeah, okay. There's quite a bit that you can say. This is, once again, sacrificial law, and so you kind of have to look at the functional parts that are applicable to us, because it's obviously not telling us to reinvent a sacrificial system. We don't have priests and temples and all that stuff anymore. So the thing you do is you look at the text and you say, okay, what is still applicable to the counting, the system, the common man that you can glean out of it. There's a couple things in the Hebrew that are really interesting about this text. One is the use of the word kodesh, which is usually the word for new moon, and it says a new meat offering right here in verse 26. At least in King James, it says also in the day of the first fruits when you bring a new meat offering. That word is kodesh. So it could read, if different punctuation, a new moon meat offering. The other interesting thing about it is if you take the sacrifices that are commanded to be given during the day that this is specifically referring to, which I would say is tomorrow, and you looked at it and you looked at the laws for the new moon, go back and find it for you. Two seasons. Burn offering, a lamb, Sabbath day. Okay, verse 11. It says, in the beginnings of your months, and the Septuagint just says in your new moons, ye shall offer a burnt offering unto the Lord, 2 young bullocks, 1 ram, 7 lambs of the first year without spot. Now just notice, look at what that says. So here's the priest, 2 young bulls, 1 ram, and 7 lambs, right? Now go back to the law concerning that offering, 26. The day of the first fruits when you bring it, it tells you you have a holy convocation. It says, verse 27, he shall offer a burnt offering for the sweet savor unto the Lord, 2 young bullocks, 1 ram, and 7 lambs of the first year. In other words, you double the new moon sacrifice on Pentecost, or Pentecost was the other day, but on the Feast of Weeks, on that new moon. So one of the, I'd say, circumstantial evidence, I mean surrounding body of evidence that would help substantiate this is a new moon festival, is that the new moon's sacrifice was doubled during that feast, and or it would be doubled if it was also that. So in other words, they would have one sacrifice for the new moon, then another one for the festival, which would double the same sacrifice 2 times. that's important because you don't see that throughout, you know, in other festivities. So, you know, you have the Sabbath being doubled and things like that, but new moon offering usually is not repeated. And so that's kind of an important thing to notice. Look at, if you look at the language of what it says there, it says the day of the first fruits, when you bring your new meat. Now, the word meat in King James English means bread, grain, specifically. So it's a new grain offering unto the Lord after your weeks be out. And so there's another thing to notice there when you talk about after your weeks be out. That can be understood either in after your 7 weeks are out. And one of the reasons why I'd say this offering was offered on the new moon also, circumstantially, is because the new moon, while it is associated to the Sabbath and it is one long Sabbath, it is technically its own day. It is the day of the new moon, and it happens after the Sabbath. So after the Sabbaths be out is another way to say that. Then you have that holy convocation on the new moon. So you actually have, I think, enough groundwork from what you see is there's enough time to explain why there's multiple days, and it's called a feast of weeks rather than just the day of weeks or something like that. Because usually when you have a one-day observance, it's just a day of this or that, like the Day of Atonement. But whenever you have a feast, you have multiple days gang together. And so that would be the answer to the question, I think, on that, as far as you should have a holy convocation. You should do no work. That's for the people. But here's what the priests are doing. They're doubling the new moon offering on that new moon as a special occasion. And so before we go on anywhere else, is there any questions, comments, or thoughts?
Pentecost will always fall on a new moon.
Well, depending on how you're using the word Pentecost. You know, the word Pentecost literally in Greek means count of 50.
Right.
So we have two numbers that we have to consider. You have 7 weeks, and then you have another phrase in another place that says the 50 days. So the question is, and like I said, the Jews, modern day Jews, they just count from the Sabbath of the wave sheaf, 50 days, and whatever day that lands on, they hold it. It has no connection to any Sabbaths. They just say it's a numbered count.
I got you.
On the other hand, from the lunar perspective, you're actually counting 7 lunar weeks that brings us to this time.
What should be today?
Yes.
Which would be the 49th.
But if you count 50 days, it came out to yesterday, right up to the feast. And then at evening, when the day of Pentecost has fully come, in other words, it's about to end, fully come means it's full, which is entirely almost over, the apostles were gathered together on that day, celebrating up until the evening at the beginning of the Feast of Weeks. And that would go on. So if you have a two-day new moon and a one-day Sabbath, you've got a longer Feast of Weeks that week. If you have, like we have this year, we only have 2 days of Feast of Weeks. But you still have the 50 days coming at the same new moon and lasting for the duration until the third new moon. That make sense?
I was a little bit confused, but that's all right.
Okay, well, let's look at Acts chapter 2, Acts chapter 2, 1 through 4, pretty common. And we'll... we could also tie some other stuff in there as we go. You know, another interesting thing I didn't mention was it's believed that the first festival ever recorded in the Bible between kept by Cain and Abel was actually first fruits. That's what it says he brought in Hebrews. In the book of Hebrews, when it gives the account of what happened, it says that Abel brought of the firstlings, of the fattest and the cheapest, and offer them to the Lord, whereas Cain brought an inferior offering to the Lord, and that is an offering of grain and an offering of flesh. And so it's the same concept that they're principally working off of. And the interesting thing is, if you look at even the language of that, it's similar to the language you'll find in the book of Acts. It says, I'll just go there real quick, Genesis chapter 4. And I'll read it to you, and then we'll look at the language. And, you know, kind of consider the timing of what we're all talking about. We can go over some of this a little bit later, maybe, in just regular discussion. Verse 2, Genesis 4, says, and she, referring to Eve, again bare his brother, Abel, and Abel was a keeper of sheep, Cain was a tiller of the ground, so we're back to agriculture again. And it says here, it says, in the process of time it came to pass when Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord, and Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. The Lord had respect to Abel and his offering, but to Cain and to his offering he had no respect. And so the firstling concept's built right into that, whatever they're doing. And so this is believed by most people, the first recorded holy convocation that took place. And we have a clear distinction of the visible versus the invisible church. Believers who are worshiping inwardly, truly, faithfully, versus believers who are just there for the presentation, you know, just there to be there. And God not respecting Cain because he's just there to be there, and Abel truly is worshiping in spirit and in truth. Okay? But what I want to point out here is in the process, the term in the process of time. Well, think about what we just looked at, all the counting. There's this constant concept in the Feast of Weeks where you have this counting going on. You know, a process of time occurring, an occurrence of time. And if you look at Acts 4, most of us probably have that those memorable lines somewhat memorized, when the day of Pentecost had fully come, right? So once again, we're dealing with once this passage of time has taken place. And it's just a constant theme that you see referring to this specific festival, that there's a passage of time in order for fruits to ripen, for things to happen, for time to occur, right? And so Acts 2:1 says it like that. When the day of Pentecost was fully come, you could say when the counting of the 50 had occurred, had in the process of time had taken place, the process of 50 days had come, they were all with one accord in one place. And there suddenly came a sound from heaven of a rushing mighty wind, and it filled the house where they were all sitting. And so that's kind of the gist of just looking at that statement. Now, the reason we call it Pentecost, you won't find that word in the Old Testament anywhere, because it's a Greek word, and it's a Greek concept, and it literally just means the count of 50. So that's the term they chose to use, and for whatever reason, in the New Testament, and all the historical sources use that term, too. Matter of fact, the book of Acts contains the most generic terminology for the feast to be understood probably by the Greek world to some extent that could be used. And one of the other things, like for instance, Day of Atonement was just called the fast. And the apostles talk about once the fast had passed. Some people don't realize that when you read Josephus and Philo, they say the Day of Atonement is the fast. So there was a phraseology among Greek-speaking Hebrews back then that they kind of like, it was like a shorthand explanation. Kind of like when we talk about unleavened bread, the whole feast, we usually just say Passover. That's how they did it too. When we talk about the Day of Atonement, we say, well, the fast is coming. It becomes shorthand, you know, the way that you refer to things. And in this, the shorthand became Pentecost, the counting of the 50, because that brings you up to the point where the feast starts. And then you let the new moon run its natural course of holy convocation time, Sabbath and new moon, and then you encapsulate it with two bookends. You got your beginning and your ending on both sides. And if you have an extra day, you have an extra day of feast. If you don't, then you don't. And so I think that pretty much covers a lot of stuff. I know the little kids are like, what are we talking about? It's something to do with wheat, barley.
So when it comes to the 7 weeks, mm-hmm. and then people want to add the 50, so that does that have to deal with like the barley harvest, and then the idea that the wheat has to be harvested? Is that where they get that idea from?
Yeah.
So as opposed to the first fruits of the.
really, I mean, if you take the equinox approach where you're keeping either the full moon closest to the equinox or you're keeping the full moon, the new moon after the equinox, there's two methods that are used in that way too. You usually, in some climates it'll work, but, you know, in most climates, and I've even read several commentaries that it doesn't work that way practically in Israel either, so just saying. You are going to start too early, and then in order to try to line that up with the summer wheat harvest, they have to have more time for that celebration. It would happen too early in the Middle East. And so I think the concept came about with people trying to figure out, well, why is this not lining up? And if you just move everything 1 month ahead, it works fine as long as you start at the right marker point. But if you don't, then you have to make up the time somehow. And the best way to do it is say, okay, do 7 weeks plus the 50, and then that gives us enough time that we can have the wheat harvest occur on time.
Most times the wheat harvest is a little bit later.
Just a little bit later. Right.
In the count of the 50, would a one-day conjunction or two-day conjunction interfere with the count, or is that month? What is that month?
Well, it's going to change it. Your 50-day count's either going to happen on the evening of that work day or the evening of the Sabbath. So if you're counting the new moon as two separate days, you're gonna definitely have a change there. If you have in the middle that difference. Now, I've heard people propose the idea that for just that month, maybe we should only have a one-day new moon and stay, like, no matter what the moon says, do it that way anyway, just to keep the count to come out the same every year. But I don't think you can justify that.
But what you're saying is, though, if there is a two-day conjunction, you would count the two-day conjunction as a one-day conjunction.
No, I think you're still going to land up this new moon period. It's just a question of whether the 50th day happens on the Sabbath or the day before the Sabbath.
Like last year.
And that would be conditional based upon a two-day conjunction.
The one new moon that happens in between the two.
Last year we lived.
Okay.
Last year I think it landed on the Sabbath proper. The 50th day count landed right on the Sabbath. Mm-hmm. But it only fluctuates either at the day before or the day after. There's a 1 day window, which, you know, I'll say this, this is the feast that most people will say, well, see, this is why the lunar Sabbath doesn't work, because we need to have this 49 and then 50, perfect 50s.
Right.
What most people don't realize is that if they're counting from the Sabbath of Passover, which most people do anyway, it's going to be 50 days, and then they need to find the closest Sunday to it. You're immediately going to have more than 50 days anyhow.
Sure.
So you can have as much as 56 days in the Catholic count.
I get that.
And still call it Pentecost.
Or compared to the Hallel calendar, which would just fall on
whatever random day it happens.
There's
50 days, and boom, there you are. Even if it's on Wednesday. Yeah.
Okay. So,
and it's not going to correspond to the lunar weeks either. The Hallel calendar, it won't collate at all.
So was yesterday the 50th day, or is today the 50th?
Well, this year it was. So the calendar is accurate this year. Like the one that's on there. I don't know if you've got a piece of paper. That the paper calendar, it comes out. That was printed for this year's. And if you see the way I did the calendar, I spread some of the memorable occasions. I put them on the line rather on one solid day. Because depending on how you read that text, could change which day it is that those things occur. Because it doesn't specifically say on this day. It just says this many days after Christ's appearance or whatever. Which is another point that you can kind of make for Pentecost happening as it does, is if you look at where Christ is speaking in Acts chapter 1, it tells us that he was, from the time of it, after his passion, he He showed himself by many infallible proofs being seen for 40 days. And so if you do the count starting with the first Sabbath of the month,
the ninth day,
yeah, it runs out to the 46th or 47th, depending on how that new moon would work that year. And then he says, wait here until you're endued with power from on high, which is only 3 days later. So you once again have a three-day pattern, you know, where he ascends to the Father and leaves them for a period of 3 days, and then on Pentecost, the Spirit's sent. And so you just have a three-day gap between the time Christ ascends to the time that the feast begins, where they're all gathered. Whereas if you were to take another approach, you know, take a different approach to when you start your count, there would have been more like a week and some days afterwards from the 50 days. It would have went through that new moon, and they would be keeping Pentecost on the following week at some point. So.
Okay. But so even though if the Pentecost falls, whether on the 28th or the 29th, the sacrifices that were discussed and
the ones in
Numbers 28,
those happen on the new moon.
Those happen on the new moon. Okay.
And then, like I said, the circumstantial evidence that supports that is the sacrifices are the same on Pentecost as they are on the new moon. And so if you keep with that line of thinking and read Numbers 28 sometime in your spare time, you'll see that God doubles the sacrifices on days where you have a Sabbath and then you have a special feast day. So you'll have like regular Sabbath and then the Feast of Unleavened Bread. You know, you'll see he adds things to the sacrifice. And so in this case, it's a doubled new moon sacrifice. You see what I'm saying?
I gotcha.
So there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that kind of ties the whole thing together. But once again, you're left with one question. What method of counting can you view the natural cycle? Or how do you view the natural cycle through the counting process, through the 7-week process? It'd be easy if God never mentioned the number 50 anywhere. If he just said Feast of Weeks, 7 weeks, well, that still lands you here. You know, it's just 7 lunar weeks. You don't have to define new moons and think about how long that is and all that. It would just simply be the Feast of Weeks. But since the number 50 is in there, how do you correspond that to 7 weeks and get the same answer? You know, so you basically got like think of algebra. You got A, B, you get C, right? You got A plus B equals C. Well, what are you going to get? Well, we got 50 days in play. We got 7 weeks in play. We also have to add, okay, so we're taking a lunar Sabbath perspective of Genesis 1, chapter 14, the lights of heaven. You got all this stuff in play. How do you add or times this to this to this to get this? The answer is, what is the Feast of Weeks, or what is this festival, and how do I get it from this arrangement God has put out here? And it's no different than asking the same question, you know, when is Abib? Well, you got to go out and look at nature. Then you got to read the text. You can put those two things together, and then you come out with and then you plug the moon into it for the full moon festival on the 15th day of the month. And once you add all that together, you got one answer on the other side, you know, or a couple answers to choose from. So I don't know if that makes it more complicated, but essentially looking at all the texts in scripture has to be trying to triangulate us into an understanding, give us multiple references in order to arrive at the angle. No different than figuring out an angle on a roof. You know, if you're trying to figure out how to cut a triangle without actually marking it on it, you measure from here to here, you measure from here to here, you measure from there to there, and if all those measurements are right and they're based on a square, you're going to have the right angle. Right, Josh? And that's essentially what you're doing. So it's nothing that God doesn't require in regular life anyway. You know, this is something we do all the time. It's just, we would like it to be so crystal clear. And for whatever reason, you know, God says it's the glory of God to conceal matter and the glory of kings to reveal it. What do you think of that, Logan?
Well, there could have been a deep cultural understanding, too, during this time. You know,
well, just arriving.
Confused when this was going on.
just starting with the premise that the moon dictates seasons and the harvest is what God wants us to celebrate, just those 2 points establish a whole different concept than what the Gregorian calendar establishes. Just an agricultural perspective and a lunar, solar, stellar, I mean star perspective, just believing those 2 things alone changes the way you have to interpret. I'm going to close in prayer then. Brother Roger, could I have you close us in prayer today?
Yes, I can do that. Father, well, always thank you for this time we've had together here, discussing the peace and trying to get these things wrapped around our brains and where we understand the significance of all of it. I ask you, Father, to be with us the rest of this Sabbath day and time of Pentecost. Continue to bless us as you do so often. And we're very grateful for that. In Yeshua's name, I pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, brother.